This is Pamela Kuhn, and the curtain is up on Center Stage, the show about the arts and the artists behind their work. Classical music is changing, and post-pandemic, that change has been enormous. Like the rest of the world, the arts have shifted, incorporating a definite change of perspective in how artists are using their wide range of talents. Born out of tens of thousands of hours in discipline, any performing classical artist will tell you that the chances of that work being rewarded financially equal to the work is reserved for only a few. But in the reshaping of classical musicians that we are seeing now, perhaps the recognition can finally be met. And with contemporary compositions in their repertoire, which raises awareness of social issues, there is hope for young people as they partake of these shift performances. Well, I have with me today an artist representing this new direction of classical musicians. Josh Henderson is determined as a multicultural kind of guy. He is a band member of Warp, a new voice in the world of genre-obliterating direction of classical music, and that quote was voiced by the Columbia Free Times. Cincinnati Music Conservatory and NYU trained, Josh works as a cross-genre violinist, violist, electric bassist, and composer. He has appeared at worldwide venues from the Kennedy Center to the Forbidden City Concert Hall in Beijing. He has collaborated with celebrities such as members of the Eagles and Blue Oyster Cult, and he has served as music director to the Grammy Award-winning Damian Escobar of Nothing But Strings. But there is much more to this man in the group Warp, as we will discover today. Warp released their new album, Sermon of the Matriarch, January 9th, with a concert at the Brooklyn Art House. Josh Henderson is bringing his plugged-in sense of style to Center Stage today. And Josh, I have to thank you for taking the time to be with me.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
You know, it's kind of cool. We're meeting on a Sunday morning. I'm just going to presume that you had a gig or a recording project of some sort last night. Am I right?
Yeah, just playing a little quartet concert of some Beyonce songs for a few folks.
Beyonce, I love it.
Yeah.
As like arranged by yourselves?
No, not by myself, just like from some other like company. But it's one of those things they kind of go into and I'm like, oh, I don't really want to do this. But then like, you know, the audience, they're so engaged and very supportive and they're just like so jazzed up that, you know, I think the whole group just kind of really woke up.
Wow, I'll bet it was spectacular. You know, I just saw that the Oregon Symphony in Portland was also doing a big concert of Beethoven and Beyonce, which I thought was really clever programming. I mean, what a way to get people into the auditorium again. And this is I'm talking about in the changing face of music, you know, post-pandemic. It's pretty exciting.
Oh, yeah. And just like, you know, like the face of a visionary, like someone with that kind of scope and impact on like the world is like we have Beethoven's face and then like Beyonce's face. And it's like they're both doing the same type of, you know, moving mountains in the music world. And yeah, that's awesome.
Interesting. Moving mountains. I like that. I like that. So my first question to you right now is, who are you really? I mean, here you are, this classically trained artist. You've got such a pedigree, Josh. You know, are you a violinist? Are you a violist? Are you a composer? What comes first?
I think, you know, definitely all my degrees and the most training have been in violin. And that's, you know, what I usually introduce myself as. But I'm very lucky to have like very great violin teachers throughout my life who have taught beyond the instrument. So yeah. Like, which I think I hope is a thing that if any teachers are listening to this, whether they're violin teachers or like math teachers or whatever, that, you know, those instructors like Mr. Safran Styles, Mr. Tanaka in New York taught me all these many skills that I can use, you know, apply on the viola, apply to composition, apply to life, to the group Warp Trio I'm in, how to think about putting your product out into the world and how to like, you know, connect with people and all these things. And also like the discipline that kind of comes with all that stuff that you need for like a, you know, a traditional path, whether that's practicing for orchestra auditions or competitions and things like that. So yeah, I think I'm just a musician, just a guy out here.
You know, I've interviewed Joshua Bell on my show, And he comes across as just a guy too. But it's a different generation from what you're growing up in.
Even though, if you look at us, he probably looks like he's 4 years younger than me. It's amazing because he is pretty close to my parents' age, and someone that's like him is such a wonderful player and has been around for so long and so relevant.
Right.
It's like pretty much my entire musical life. The name helps, like, remember. It's like, oh, yeah, that's another guy named Josh who does, like, the violin. But, yeah, that's an interesting person to look at in terms of, like, developing a career and, like, evolving it and staying current and with all the stuff that goes around and changes in the world.
Because when you think about it, he really changed the tide a long time ago about presenting himself as like an idol type. You know, I remember one of his album covers where he was shirtless, you know, from the waist up. And at that time, that was huge for classical musicians, right?
Oh, yeah. And I've seen a David Oistrakh pose like that. Or that wouldn't have been cool, but he just didn't do it.
And is being cool now like centerpiece to what classical musicians are offering? I mean, honestly.
I think there's a lot of, I think no one should try to be cool. I think authenticity is what everyone should strive to do. If your authentic self is like you're a quote unquote nerd, you're super into arcane stuff. But if that's you and you like own it, that's amazing. I feel like you will find success. If that's you and then you're trying to like do something that's like not you musically or like otherwise, then I think you're setting yourself up for maybe not success. Or maybe if you do find some kind of temporary fleeting thing, then you have to live this lie and that's no fun. Yeah, so I think classical musicians now need to think about the bigger picture of the world and like music. Like there's so much going on. There's these horrible fires in LA and like all these climate issues. There's wars and there's all these things, you know, we need to practice 10 hours a day and like learn this aria or whatever to beat Sally in this opera competition or whatever. But like, you know, there's so many global things that we can use our musicianship to engage. And I think that's just so much more important.
Yeah, you've just said it, to be authentic. And actually, I think since the world has shifted on its axis since the pandemic, the music business has changed a lot. Just to try and get people back into auditoriums, you know, at the Metropolitan or New York Philharmonic or wherever. And it always strikes me that since the pandemic, regional orchestras have actually fared better than the major cities. Because people who are clamoring for culture, they're not going to let down their regional orchestras or opera companies. They're actually going to be there and attend. Now that's authentic. But, you know, I found that in New York, we became a little insular. And maybe for someone like yourself, who's gigging a lot and doing a lot of recording sessions, post-pandemic actually probably worked out well for you.
Oh, yeah. I teach as well. So, like, I interact with some younger, like, students in their early college years. And also, of course, like, you know, older individuals who've been freelancing and playing for my entire life and then some. And definitely during the during COVID stuff, like when stuff was bad and contagious and there were no vaccines, like I felt so sorry for some of the kids I was teaching because I was just like, this is so crazy to try and get into this world. Like, I really don't know what to tell you. I mean, I can tell you how to play in tune and like practice your scales and stuff like that. But like in terms of like career stuff is like, it's weird now because I don't know. You don't know. We don't know what's going to happen. And, you know, the older folks and the older generation, you know, they're used to doing things a certain way and they've been doing it for like 30 years, 40 years. And then all of a sudden it's like completely upended. And it's like, I'm also like, you know, if I'm like a 7-year-old violinist and it's like very dangerous for me to go and try and do a recording session and risk getting COVID. And so it's like, I need to like not be there. But the folks like myself, like I've been in New York since 2008, which is, you know, right at the bottom of the financial crisis, and it was a wonderful time to move here. So you just start at rock bottom. And I'm young enough that, like, you know, I can take these risks and I have a network. I feel like a lot of people in my position are very, very lucky because we had, you know, there's all this kind of work kind of coming in from older folks that maybe moved away or just couldn't be present because of the health risks. We were very, very lucky. Not everyone, but I should say I was very, very lucky in that regard to weather that just to be a kind of like the right place this time. next time, it might be one of those older people, and I'm like, well, this is it for me. I'm going to have to chill and let the folks who are 15, 20 years younger than me get in there and do their thing.
I love that. You'll persevere, won't you?
We do
and
try,
authentically. And you are cool, I have to say.
Oh, thank you.
So talk to me about growing up as a young musician like you did. Did you have mentors along the way? Because I'm really big on that. And I know that you are too, about education. What was the role of mentorship for you as a youth growing up?
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, first of all, I just had great parents and grandparents. I think it really does start there. If you're lucky enough to have that, that's huge. So definitely, like, number one, you know, mom and dad, and then my grandfather. I live with him and my grandmother. When I was super young, my parents were still in school and they had me. So they were a very, 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 very huge part, you know, because they're in their 50s or 60s at that point. So my grandpa was like, all right, this is a piano. This is a Mozart concerto. This is Miles Davis. And listening to Duran Duran, which I listened to all that stuff, like, definitely my grandpa Bill was like number one in terms of like introducing poetry and like art and all that stuff from a super, super young age, just hanging out with him and my grandma. And she passed when I was pretty, pretty young. And my grandpa passed last year. But that's definitely like the number one source of why I play. I started on piano when I was super, super young, and then eventually shifted over to violin. So I think it starts at home first, if one is lucky enough to have that kind of situation,
yeah.
Which I was very thankful for that. And then through school, like I mentioned, I had wonderful teachers who, like I said, taught me the instrument, but also taught me just life and how to manage myself and like my time. And musically, you know, Kurt Sassmanns in Cincinnati and Noga Tanaka and NYU mm-hmm. In New York were just like wonderful musicians and people. And so I think that they were so generous, such generous teachers to not just myself, but like all their students, and just elevating us as humans and musicians. So those are like, you know, the big folks along the way that really, really helps. And I had many wonderful teachers in like just regular old school too, that were strict and like make sure instilled like discipline and all those things that are really important. That seems silly when you're in seventh grade, but when you're well beyond that are good skills.
Everything counts, doesn't it? Every
Definitely.
Word from anyone.
Yeah.
You know, you seem to me a really generous man with a lot of ardor about life. I mean, you speak about just living and the integrity of living. Did you just pop out of the womb like that?
Oh, I mean, I'm in general just happy to be here. But again, I do want to, I'm very lucky. I don't have like, I have two arms, two legs, you know, things work fine enough, you know. Some slight knee problems right now, but like, you know, I'm getting closer to 40, so that's to be expected. Nothing crazy. But again, I think that's just like, if you're born here and like we're in America, and you have opportunities, even if certain things don't pan out the way you might want them to on like the the national scale, it's very lucky to just be here and be able to have this interview with you and like talk about, you know, music and things like that. So I definitely want to acknowledge like that just like privilege off the bat of like being healthy.
That's beautiful. I think there's something in the fact that your parents and your grandparents handed down to you this wonderful, generous helping of, you know, let's love. I adore that in you. You're special. Okay. So I want to know all about WARP. And to my listeners, this is spelled W4RP. What was the genesis of this group, Josh? Was WARP something that grew through COVID, or was it pre-COVID?
Oh, yeah, we've been around for a little while. And our government name is WARP Trio, W4RPTRIO. So the group started when J.Y. Lee, the cellist, him and I grew up. We both kind of moved around a lot as children.
Mm-hmm.
But during high school, we're the same age. During our high school years, we were in Nashville, Tennessee, and we played Dvorak American, just played chair music together and hung out and just became best friends and always together. And he moved to New York. He went to Juilliard School, and then I moved to Cincinnati for school, and then eventually I moved here. So we've been playing together for, at this point, most of our lives, which is crazy thing.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. It really is. If you're lucky enough to do that, and still be friends and live together for, at some point we were sharing a bunk bed together but yeah, you had to cut that out after a little while. But yeah, so he started the group maybe almost like 10 years ago. Because at the time he was touring with a group, playing a lot of, kind of his first like professional gig with, this group, the Core Ensemble. They do some really, really cool programming, and it's all kind of, a lot of it's like social justice related, and they work with like actors and combining music sometimes by like minorities, and that also deals with like the Harlem Renaissance or something like that, and pairing some Langston Hughes with some close to that Ferguson or something, like, you know, things like that, and just a lot of programming stuff that, I mean, now we've had like almost a revolution of sorts, and orchestras are like actively programming, like, you know, Carlos Simon, Justin Montgomery, and like this is like amazing stuff. But this group has been around since like, I want to say either the early 90s or 80s, and they've been doing stuff like that for a while. It was super cool. So he was traveling to like very kind of small towns in America and putting on these programs, and maybe sometimes one of the biggest audiences. And he was also just surprised that people just like had never really engaged with like a cello before, or like seen heard of some of these composers, or like authors, writers, or even some of these social issues. Like if you're in middle America, that might not be as prominent like knowledge of it as in, you know, New York, LA. And, you know, the group is a little older group. So he was like, it'd be cool to do something. It would be cool to do something like this, but maybe like we can adapt it a little bit, or just kind of make it for this, you know, this generation. Cause you know, that group's getting a little older. They're starting to slow down. So that was kind of the genesis of it. And, I have been running around New York for like a while and playing a bunch of like rock bands and doing stuff all over the place. Joe is, again, wonderful cellist, and, you know, stay with David Sawyer and like Joel Crossing, and just great classical chair musician, and just so, so wonderful. So we got together, and then we met Mikkel randomly, the pianist, through another friend. It was very serendipitous. And then we started playing like the next day, and Rick, our percussionist, I've been playing with him for like many, many years in different bands and stuff. And I was like, oh, it'd be great to have like percussion in this. So our first gig, we were called like Warp Trio, but pretty much we've always had four members. So the recent rebranding is the W4RP, which Rick designed. So yeah, kind of born as like a regular old piano trio that maybe mixed it up a little bit. And then throughout the years we've been, mixing it up a lot of it, and yeah, and just seeing what that, so that involves working with, in terms of instrumentation, like, you know, violin, cello, piano, I double on bass. When we do our bigger electric shows, Mikkel has like the release show, he had 1,000 keyboards, too many keyboards. It was ridiculous, but it was very, very, very cool. Not 1,000, but like,
I like 1,000 actually.
A lot, but like just like for different sonic possibilities, like Rick's on drum set, and there's electronics, and we got Faye, a rapper who collaborated on this album, who I've played with her for many, many, many years. You know, it's just like kind of like we had some backup singers, but like even though we're, you know, a four-person band, like that spirit of collaboration is super, super huge for us. And just like, how can we just like expand, just get more people in the fold and tell more stories? And because, you know, we're just four guys. We do come from a diverse kind of cultural lineup, but there's, you know, there's even more we can do with other people involved in terms of reaching folks and communicating messages that maybe us as like cis men can't like fully, you know, have a lived experience. So the more you can expand your performing kind of coterie, I think you can do better. So that's the genesis, origin,
history. I love this. So you're really family is what we're talking about. more than...
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
You guys have known each other a long time. You performed together. You've admired each other's work. And now look what has happened. You know, sometimes I wonder if great musical ensembles, you know, they kind of do their own thing. And then as the circle becomes smaller, they just come together. And voila, a new birth has happened, mm-hmm. you know, in an ensemble. And for Warp, because of your real attention to social injustice, I've noticed that incorporating the work of rappers is very important to you. I mean, there's a definite direct communication there, you know,
totally.
That your instruments can't really, really replicate.
Yeah, yeah.
How is it working with rappers and what, because it's the human voice, what kind of space do you have to give to them to make this really extraordinary?
Oh, yeah, that's a wonderful question. And, yeah, so Faye goes by the moniker Liquid. We've worked together for a long, long time. Like, we met, Rick and I were playing a show in like Williamsburg before Williamsburg was like really crazy. I mean, mm-hmm. in like 2009 or something. And there was like, I think a friend of hers was like doing burlesque dance or something. And then she was like, oh man, you guys are so cool. Like, I got a band, like, any. Violin, like, and then we just became friends. And even that, like, she like really reminded me of my youngest sister at the time. So like, again, like more family. But so that period, that history of just like of collaboration, mm-hmm. And like respect for the other person's craft, like I think it goes a long way. So in terms of like that, like this project, like there were a lot of phone conversations between myself and like Mikhail and her about just like topics and the album's right. sense, just like folklore, Afro diasporic, matriarchal folklore, and just like, you know, just kind of spitballing about like ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And then like the first track of the album was very, very collaborative. I think we did a little residency at, near Avalok Farm up in, New Hampshire. We put some of the stuff together there. But I did some of the musical stuff and I was like, here's like a little kind of loop or just like a vibe. Then we, you know, shot back an MP3 to her. She was like, oh, this is great. Like, here's some text. Like, so there's like that kind of back and forth, and then we can use the text and be like, oh, like, well, we're getting this kind of mood, and can craft something.
Yeah.
That works. And then even in the studio, because she wrote like a bunch of stuff, and we were like figuring out with Steve Pretzman from the record label, the Phenotypic, who produced it, kind of cutting stuff down and like figuring out the instrumental parts so that things kind of fit, and leaving actual space to hear the lyrics and stuff like that, and let them like really hit. So it's very just collaborative kind of back and forth type of thing. A couple of the other tracks are more like, all right, can you do like 16 bars and then like a chorus or something like that, and here's like a kind of bass and here's like a storyline, and then we're a little quicker. But yeah, I think that just like the mutual respect and admiration for like the other person's needs, and also just like talent, and then you can really craft something really, really special.
Oh, wow. That's very interesting. It's a little bit different than the life of an opera singer, you know,
yeah.
Which is much more structured. You guys are giving space and a lot of leeway for the magic to literally happen in front of you. I mean, I can only imagine there are many times in your work together when you get these ideas and she's putting down ideas and one of you has an aha moment, mm-hmm. that this must be really, really, really touching and energizing to such a level that your soul is being revivified.
Oh, yeah. And even like in the core four, like when we're figuring stuff out, which is an interesting thing about this group is like, we're figuring out, like, for example, like structures of like compositions, and there's the, you know, things get heated. People have different opinions on like what's gonna best serve the song. But it's always like, you know, we all know we're on the same team. So like whatever happens, it's gonna be whatever's is the best for, you know, conveying the message and having the best effect on the audience and the most like effective situation, which I mean is a similar thing to like if a string quartet's figuring out the phrasing of a particular phrase and people get you know very very impassioned about ideas, but you know I think a similar process, like you have to be like, all right, let me just check the ego at the door and just be like, what's going to be best for, you know, the audience, like the people taking all this stuff in.
Wow. Are you looking for fame yourself?
I mean, I'll take it, but I don't think I want that kind of, you know, like the over the top, like, folks, you know, I feel there's like some, there's many pluses and minuses and like there's different shades of fame, one can have.
That's a good way of putting it, shades of fame, because once you have that, you have to sustain it. And what you're doing now is kind of crossing over into that popular music arena, where 5 minutes ago you might have been great, but you know everything has shifted. But something tells me with you guys and your training, you're going to be really hot on what's working in so many different ways. And that is where it's authentic and exciting. Violinist, composer, and modern artist Josh Henderson and I will be back next week in this laid-back conversation to speak about fame, the life of a gigging musician, and the future of Warp and their recent release, The Sermon of the Matriarch, next Tuesday on Center Stage. You can find more of my shows at centerstagewithpamelacoon.com. You've been listening today to a track from Warp's new release entitled Up, and that is certainly the direction that this trio is taking. Until next week, everyone, stay safe out there. This is Pamela Coon, and the curtain is now down on Center Stage.